Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Sarah.
And you're listening to...
What's New?
Nancy Drew.
Book Review.
Come get a clue.
Boop-boop-a-doo.
This podcast, we talk about the CW's... Ugh, CW. The TV show Nancy Drew. We review the weekly episodes and have a fun time. Today, we're bringing you an in-between season fun little episode where we're reviewing a book with a friend.
Welcome to Elena Gautier Mamouril. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we know Elena because we guested on her podcast, Bookshelf Remix, where we talked about The Other Black Girl, which let's just throw in real quick. We just found out Ashley Murray, who was one of the stars of Tom Swift, is playing Hazel in the Hulu translation of The Other Black Girl.
Yeah, if y'all want to have me on to do the miniseries, I will be happy to guest.
Well, awesome. That's a perfect segue. So our other podcast is Swift Review, because Tom Swift has been canceled like Nancy Drew has. Sarah and I can go ahead and I guess announce now that we are hoping to continue a Swift Review by following the cast and crew on their future projects.
Yeah, one of the main ones we want to do for sure is The Other Black Girl. So yeah, we will definitely be reaching out to you again.
Amazing. I have psychic gifts.
You really did kind of make that. Isn't it weird how that, like, it was such a strange thing. Mm-hmm. I saw the news. I was like, wait, is this real? And then I got so excited to find out that she's going to be Hazel, because I feel like that's really the most nuanced character and will give her the most acting ability.
She's so juicy as a character and gets to have awesome clothes. So I'm really excited.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So now you have a few other podcasts, correct?
I do. I host Philosophy Casting Call, which is a philosophy podcast where I interview underrepresented philosophers. And I'm working on season 3 at the moment, which I'm opening up under the theme of interdisciplinarity. So I'm interviewing people who aren't philosophers by training, but who use philosophy in their kind of work. So I'm talking to historians and anthropologists and kind of digital culture, pop culture scholars and stuff. And yeah, I'm having so much fun doing that. So hopefully that will be out in the new year in 2023. And I'm also excited to usher in season 3 of Bookshelf Remix now that I have a new co-host, Eva Sprecher. And yeah, I released the books we'll be doing. So if you check out our Instagram at Bookshelf Remix, you can find out and decide if you want to read some of the books in advance of the episodes dropping again next year. And take a breath. I also host a Gilmore Girls deep dive thematic podcast with my friend Soraya Emanuel of Booked Solid, and it is called Women of Questionable Morals. And we've had so much fun. We've had great audience engagement. We now have a Discord. We have connected with other Gilmore Girls podcasters, and it's just bringing us so much joy to be able to discuss all things Stars Hollow in the way that we want to. So if you're not afraid of spoilers, or if you've seen Gilmore Girls a lot, definitely check out Women of Questionable Morals.
Are you going through like episode by episode on that one? Okay. All right. No, so I have to finish the whole series before I listen. Okay.
Yeah. Because I mean, there are great podcasts that do episode by episode. The one we guested on was Talking Fast podcast, which is really fun. But for various reasons, including the fact that Sarai and I are obsessed and like breathe Gilmore Girls. And so we're just like, we can't just do episode by episode. We need to talk about themes. We need to be like, what about race and politics in Stars Hollow? And what's the deal with the class like dynamics going on? And so we're just like really allow ourselves to be nerdy and to really critique a show that we both love. And that's very important to us, but that we engage on multiple levels.
That's really cool. I have never watched Gilmore Girls, but I have always been told I need to. And I have a really good friend who's completely obsessed with it and watches it probably once a year. I'll need to tell her about that podcast for sure. And maybe I'll listen to an episode of yours and that'll finally push me into wanting to, because I don't care about spoilers. I'm like, whatever, it's been out forever. I can know what happens and still want to go back and see it. So that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll definitely look at the list and see if you th any title grabs you. We try to be funny with our titles. So.
Very, very nice. All right. So we thought it'd be fun to have you on here and discuss a little book since Nancy Drew originally came from books and you found us from this podcast because you like Nancy Drew. So did you read much, Nancy? I'm trying to remember from the last time we talked to you before this.
I think I read sporadically. I was more an Enid Blyton child, so I read them in French, so I don't know what the titles are in English, but like the Amazing Five or whatever, like the I don't know. There were two series. There was like the Clan of Seven, and then the Group of Five, and I read all of the Group of Fives obsessively. So I was more an Enid Blyton fan. I think I picked up a few Nancy Drews here and there. I definitely watched the movie. Was it with Emma Roberts? Did a movie? Yeah, I watched that. And I had a cereal box Nancy Drew PC game called Haunted Carousel
Yeah,
that
I've played that.
oh my God, it scared me so much as a child. It was like my introduction to horror. I was like, what is this? And I recently tried to find it, but it's only on PC and I only have a Mac now. So I
Oh,
was
really?
sad.
I thought on Her Interactive, because I've played almost all of them, herinteractive.com, I'm pretty sure has all of them like downloadable for Mac and PC.
Okay, I will definitely check it out because I want to see if it's as scary as it was when I was 10.
Probably not, but I also did not realize how much younger you are than us. Because I was not 10 when that came out.
Speaking of how old Sarah and I are, so this book came out in 1988, and we are reading Nancy Drew Case Files number 24 out of 124, which is insane. And this is called Till Death Do Us Part. Sarah sent me a couple title options, and I was feeling very sad and a little morbid. And I went with this one because it was right after the cancellation. So I felt very connected to the show and very, yeah, Till Death Do Us Part, the end of the show.
I was wondering why you picked this one in particular, but yeah, that's a fair rationale.
And the romance storyline in the quick little blurb about it had us intrigued.
Well, yeah, the only description was Ned proposes to Nancy, which happens in chapter one, and then the next day he proposes to someone else. And so I was like, well, what is Ned doing? And for listeners who may not remember, Ned is Ned Nickerson, who goes by Nick on the show, but he's Ned in the books.
Yeah, so this is the first old Nancy Drew book I've successfully finished reading. Sarah read, and I tried to read, I think it was the Staircase one back in like season one of our podcast. And I was like, man, I can't do this. But this one, I devoured it. I absolutely loved it. And if all of them are this campy and completely absurd, I might have to go back and read more.
I thought it was an absolute treat. I finished it in 24 hours. I was like, this is like candy. This is, fake proposal, kind of, yeah, detective work from Nancy. I do have a couple of questions, but first, Sarah, how did you feel about the book?
I enjoyed it. I started reading it on my lunch hour and I finished it on my lunch hour. Because it's just such a quick read. Yeah, it was fun. It was, there's just the one storyline. So it's very straightforward, but it kind of pulled you in a few different directions. So I very much enjoyed it.
And I definitely enjoyed reading. This is my first Nancy Drew I've read since I've seen the show. So I have kind of all the actors in my mind, and I thought it was super fun. And I kind of like how George kind of tracks as like she's athletic and all of these things and outspoken, and Bessie is kind of like head in the clouds. And yeah, I could see the show doing something similar with these characters. So in that way, like it felt like, oh, it is authentic Nancy Drew, and like they have picked up on the actual vibes of this interaction between all the characters. I do wish there had been more of the crew involved in the actual mystery, but it was still fun.
Yeah, I feel like in most of the Nancy Drew books I've read, Bess and George are a lot more involved. And then this one, they just kind of chime in occasionally to see what's happening. And that's about it.
Yeah, they were like kind of the soundboard of like, oh, here's our opinions. Okay, go put on a cute outfit. Oh, that looks great. Like, it felt very not of this time in that sense. And there's a lot of things in here that, you know, aged certain ways. But I agree, Elena. I thought that George, to me, was the character that was the most similar to their TV show persona. Nancy, I could not envision at all. I was trying
really?
To picture, you both gave me looks. Yes, I was like Kennedy being that paranoid and bonkers bananas in the it was really just the first, like, I don't know, 40 pages of the book where Nancy is freaking out because Ned immediately proposed to someone else, and she just seems like this, like, very jealous, insecure. I don't know.
For me, that totally tracks. I could totally see Kennedy Nancy doing that, like acting like, oh, it doesn't bother her, but like really she's like kind of being like, oh, what is he doing now? And like, yeah, sure, I don't want to marry him, but how dare he like ask someone else right away? Like, I could totally see that. But I did like that the character of Nancy in the book is like, no, we shouldn't get married, like we're 18. And I think that would track with Kennedy Nancy and like the CW Nancy. And I also kind of like that Ned was like, oh yeah, thank God. Yeah. Which, I don't know, it gave it an element of fun and camp. And, mm-hmm. you know, I know it's the 80s and not, you know, I don't know, the early 1900s or something, but like, it's not unusual for like 18 year olds to get married, or the expectation that if you're dating the same person for like 2 years, you should get engaged or something. And yeah, I thought that in a way that was kind of progressive.
Yeah, I agree.
So he gets engaged to a character named Jessica. She cracked me up. She was absolutely wild.
Oh my God. Who would you cast as Jessica?
I was just thinking that. I was like, do I want to ask that question without having the answer? Nowadays, if they were doing an episode on the TV show.
If you had to pull an actor from Tom Swift, who would come and do a cameo?
Oh, I feel like Susanna would be great as Jessica.
Yeah, I think so.
Very manipulative and sneaky. I mean, it's kind of a similar character of starting off like, oh, everything's lovely, and really it's like, no, I'm completely evil and insane.
I also was thinking, staying in the CW shows, Veronica from Riverdale, I think.
Yes, Camila Mendes.
Yes, yeah. That's right. I think she would.
Yes, she would well. Be excellent. Even Lily Reinhardt, who plays Betty, could be an interesting twist, because she does have the like all-American girl next door, super sweet, and then could really be evil underneath. Could be fun.
Yeah. She's got the serial killer genes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you two read this, were you trying to solve the mystery? Were you just going along for the ride? Like, what were you thinking while you were reading it?
I was just thinking, this is so much fun, and I wasn't using my brain at all.
Same. I was, yeah, there was no part of me that was like, well, what is it? And it was funny that it ended up just being the initial thought. Like, that was really funny to me. It's like, oh, it's just money.
Didn't quite work out how it was the money, that it was her disappeared husband's aunt that passed away, so she needed to get a body to kill, so it looked like she had killed him. I don't know. It was wild. I was not trying to solve it, because it was pretty clear we did not have the clues to solve it. So I'm like, I'm just gonna go along for the ride.
No, there were so many plot holes, and even that kind of is a cop out, which I guess with the TV show, because they have the supernatural element, you can kind of use that to have a more meta commentary on human relationships and stuff. But here it's basically, no, you know, she wanted the money, we just had to find like which way around. But I did not expect it to get dark, where she's like, yeah, she's planning murder.
Yeah, I don't remember that from the old Nancy books. This is the first Nancy Drew Files I've read. And another reason I picked it was, or suggested it, was because, you know, Nancy now at the end of season three is going to be starting her own private detective agency. And so that's what these are supposed to be based off of.
Mm-hmm. This is an older Nancy like we're used to, which is nice.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't remember like people just flat out planning to murder Ned as much.
Well, it's funny because the first half of the book, you're like Sarah's first half of her lunch hour. It very much is like, oh, it's just a cute little rom-com jealousy storyline. Like, oh, there's a mystery, but nothing's happening. And when I was reading that, not being used to the Nancy Drew books, I'm like, oh, I guess this is just fluff and there's no murder. There's no actual crime happening. And then it fully turns into, no, we're going to take you down and have this big elaborate plot. I was like, oh, okay. So it is
and
more
an airplane
adult.
Chase scene.
Yes, I'm like, what is the plan? Are you gonna like parachute onto the other airplane and then parachute with? I was very excited to see where it was going.
Yeah, I was reading that. I was like, did Carolyn Keene just do a lot of research on airplanes and like she really wanted to write this down? But no, it got wild and I got worried for a bit because, as you say, Ben, the beginning of like, oh, are they just doing the bitchy, like rich girl, like gold digger trope? And I was like, ooh, how far are we going with this? And like, are we doing like the evil villain and Nancy is so pure and she needs to save Ned from this evil gold grabbing woman? But then she turned out to be kind of like an evil mastermind and I was more okay with it. I was like, okay. So she is like silly ditzy, but also has really committed to her evil. Mm-hmm. So I can respect that.
Yeah, I agree. It ended up being a well-developed character in just this absurd situation. Yes, I also, you point out that this version of Carolyn Keene really liked airplanes. The description, there's like three pages talking about how to properly prepare a parachute. And I appreciate the research, but I'm also like, I don't need to know this. So I figured it was a clue. I figured it was important, but I was also like, well, this is this person's area of interest.
Well, as soon as Jessica is like, oh, let's go skydiving, I'm like, uh-oh, she's going to try and kill, I was going to say Veronica. Sorry, I've been watching a lot of Veronica Mars.
Do not apologize for that.
And okay, but I have one question for you. How many kids in the Midwest in the 80s had private airplane pilot licenses?
Oh, everybody. No, I'm kidding. That is a great question. Yeah, because we live closer to where Nancy Drew does. We live in America in the Midwest.
Yeah, is River Heights in... Was it in Illinois?
I thought I said Indiana.
She drives to Chicago, or maybe, okay. But she drives to Chicago, like, pretty easily, like a day trip or something, so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I guess it could be Indiana, Illinois, like, yeah,
somewhere around there. But also, if you're in the Midwest, you can drive 7 hours and think it's not a big deal. That is a
true stereotype. As a Canadian, I relate.
I think it's normal for Nancy to just have this stuff. I think it was a little bit stranger that Jessica had her license and at the
and
age
Ned.
Of 18 and Ned. Yeah. And at the age of 18, how many jumps had they already gone on for skydiving?
A ridiculous amount.
Yeah. So my thought was, how does she have that money? And I mean, Carson's a lawyer, so I guess that would make sense.
These are privileged characters. They are not struggling.
Yes, true.
They don't work at the claw.
And Nancy, in all the books, she always has random knowledge of what to do and all that stuff. Yeah.
So, random, very relevant for that specific book knowledge. Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I think that's kind of a trope of the genre, right? Of the kind of, I don't know if you've seen Miss Fisher's Mysteries or this idea that it's the lead detective is a super person because they basically like know how to crack safes and they know how to fly planes and they know how to scuba dive and all of these things. And it kind of serves the plot and be like, how great is this person? So Sarah, to your point, Yeah, it makes sense that Nancy would, but the plot hinges on three teenagers being able to fly planes.
Yeah.
That's really funny that when you point it out like that.
And I just looked it up. Oh, sorry. I just looked it up in River Heights. It just says that it's never named, but later versions say that the town is near Chicago, Illinois. So it's an air of mystery.
Okay.
That's a quick little 5-hour drive from where we are. So there you go.
But how can you do a tour if you don't know where it is?
Exactly. So I had some questions. Sarah, you're going to be mad at me because I probably should have known this after doing this podcast for 3 years. But George's last name is Fane. Did they change it?
Yes, they changed it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then also her full name is Georgia. We find out in the wedding shower scene when she meets Jessica. Jessica's like, oh, did your parents want a boy? And she's like, no, I like my name and it's Georgia. Is that all accurate to your memory of these things?
In the books, yeah. I don't remember if George on the show says what her full name, but I thought it was just George because then there's Ted and Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think on the show, all the sisters, the fan sisters have like boy names or like, yeah. But I think as far as I can remember, it's canon that in the books it's Georgia, but that she goes by George. And I think, again, just based off of my knowledge of Enid Blyton books, I think that was a thing, like especially when they wrote in the 40s and the 50s, they had like the tomboy slash possible lesbian slash all of these things that it was like, I want to go by a boy's name. I want to be called Joe. I want to be called Charlie. And so, yeah, I think that was a thing with like, if you have your girl group, you're going to have the one who wants to have a boy name.
I remember when the show was first kind of getting going, I was telling some people who had read the Nancy books about it. And I was like, oh, yeah. And in this version, you know, Bess is a lesbian. And they were all shocked that it wasn't George. So I'm glad that the CW like flipped that like stereotype and the more prissy dainty one is, you know, I'm glad they at least were like, okay, we're not going to make it the obvious like demanding one. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Some of the writing in here, the words that were used were just cracking me up, which I'm assuming is pretty much a staple of the books. That's very
like, do you have some examples?
I really like that Nancy described Scott, Jessica's first husband, as a hunk and a half to Ned's two.
Yes, really cool. I love that.
Yep.
She's like, well, they look similar, but mine's better. She's all about Ned. So in these books, because like you told me, Sarah, that the original ones, it was always like hinted at that they were never actually together.
Well, they were together, but it was always her special friend.
Okay.
They didn't say like boyfriend, and they certainly never kissed.
Okay.
And I think this one like ends with them
macking on each other
and didn't say anything for a really long time or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wondering when it became like, okay, we can transition to like boyfriend or dating, or like that would be an interesting thing to know, like the year that they became an actual couple kind of thing.
Yeah, it may be when they started the Nancy Drew Files, like the new book series. Maybe that's when they transitioned, but I know they have a couple other series in there, so I'm not sure. Because I've read this one, and then I read like the original, not the original, but the reprints that came in like the 50s.
And I suppose it must be difficult when you have a character who can't really age. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, okay, well, they can't be dating for 50 years, but also, yeah, it's, I don't know how much continuity is expected in the canon when you have a series like this where you have writers across different decades. So maybe she's dating Ned in like the 30s and then not in the 50s anymore, like something like that.
Yeah, because there was something about, I think she dated a Dirk and Dirk was a jerk. And I don't remember any more than that.
Dirk the Jerk, the graveyard boy from the first episode, yes, of the Nancy Drew TV show. Elena, that's our canon because they never explained who that boy was that Nancy was with in the very first episode of the show.
Oh, Nancy was with Nick.
There was
a flashback to when she was the sea queen.
Okay. Yeah. I was very confused. I was like, that's a core crew member.
Yeah. sorry. There was, but that's how much like that even points out how they've just never talked about it again. There was a very short like high school scene. She's in a graveyard with like her old friends that she like isn't hanging out with anymore. The people who George didn't like, and there's a boy, and so we just pretended Dirk the Jerk from the books. So one thing in this book that I don't think aged very well, and I'd love to hear both of your opinions on it, is when Nancy is cleaning Jessica's room, she puts on this fake Spanish accent.
Uh-huh.
Thoughts?
Yeah, I was shocked but not surprised, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same.
I'm glad that was an oddity here. Like, it wasn't... there weren't a lot of moments in this book that made me feel that way. And being a Nancy Drew book back in the 80s, I was waiting for something. There were a few like gender role things that rubbed me funny throughout, like the line about men aren't supposed to enjoy getting attention or whatever, which was kind of funny. But then that one, I was like, oh, Nancy, you're like hiding under something and pretending to be this person because of your current job, therefore you're supposed to be this type of person, really was not okay.
And it was not as if Jessica had hung out with her so much that she would automatically recognize her voice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, probably covering up herself would be enough. Mm-hmm. Or just like going a slightly higher pitch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or just not talking and running out of the room.
Yeah, I know, that's what I would do.
Yeah, that was definitely unfortunate. Ugh.
I do agree, though. There were not a lot of moments that jumped out. It was not like when I read the Tom Swift book. I was like, oh my God, how could this even ever...
Yeah, I remember you were like, we should read this. And then you're like, scratch that. Let's not read this. It's too racist.
Yeah. It was awful.
Which that would be really interesting to read some of those picturing the characters, because it wouldn't make any sense.
Oh, no.
But I'm glad they existed, so there was some sort of stepping stone to start the series. But
yeah,
oh boy. All right, any other thoughts on this book?
I thought it was really fun. I mean, I don't have anything really profound. It was super fun. It was completely silly in the best way. It, you know, toes the line on maybe being a bit misogynistic about like women and marriage, but I want to give it a pass just because it's so bonkers that you're like, this is clearly not real life. And this is an example of like a super camp villain. And I like that Nancy had a lot of fun playing the jealous girlfriend, and it was nice to see that on the page.
Mm-hmm. Ned's like, you're overdoing it. Yeah, that was cute.
So compared to the other books that you normally read, like, you don't usually read this on Bookshelf Remix. Was it like a nice break, or was it like, oh, I have to get through this so I can get back to better books?
Oh no, it was a perfect break. I always like read a minimum of like 5 to 7 books all at the same time anyway. And okay. So, and I've been reading a lot of dystopia about, you know, settlers eating the bone marrow of indigenous people and like cannibalism in Argentina. So this was a very welcome break.
My eyes just bugged out of my head at 5 to 7 minimum. I can, if I do more than one at a time, it has to be completely, like, it needs to be fiction and nonfiction. Like, I cannot read 2 fictional books at the same time. I'll lose my mind.
See, my eyes were bugging at the blood marrow consumption. And then I was like, I wonder if there is a Nancy Drew book that deals with cannibals.
It is a trope. And I mean, I don't want to get off track, but I'm currently studying zombies, and like everything that goes on in zombie literature is fascinating when you start looking at like how the image of cannibals has been used to other people throughout history and how it's been used in like war propaganda and stuff. Anyway, So yes, my job, I look about eugenics and zombies, and then I've been reading cannibal literature and fiction. So yes, the Nancy Drew Till Death Do Us Part was the perfect palate cleanser.
All right, Elena. So while we have you still have some time?
Of course.
All right. So we would love to just chat with you a little bit about the upcoming season 4 of Nancy Drew, since you are a super fan, and also anything you want to say about season 3. We'd love to chat with you about that a little bit.
Okay, well, very important question. What do you think of Agent Park?
I love Agent Park. I mean,
Sarah, we're the same person. I was going to ask the exact same thing. Go ahead.
I love Agent Park. I know that he's there to be a foil for Ace, and the fact that he's an out of town FBI agent means that he can be conveniently like absent from the plot and put back in, which is not ideal, maybe. I have complicated feelings about sleuths and private detectives kind of having love interests that are cops. I feel like it's maybe obvious because there's like the tension because Nancy works outside of the law. If I'm allowed the diversion with Veronica Mars and our beloved Leo, there is a reason why those storylines can't really go anywhere, because at some point the cop has to be like, listen, I can't keep dating you because you keep breaking the law. And then that's just not a fun dynamic anymore. So unfortunately, I do not see Nancy and Detective Park having a long-lasting arc. But if we're going to have a foil, I think he was an excellent one.
Yeah, good points. That definitely is a trope. I feel like there's even some stuff in like some of the Batman books and things with the vigilantes and the law-abiding people, and whether they're romantic or not, there's always that frenemy aspect. So yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about Psych with Sean and Juliet. I don't know if either of you watch Psych,
Only what you've made me.
but yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like dating a coworker, I guess, because you're like working on the same thing, but ultimately, the line is drawn.
So the other big new quote unquote, because they came at the very end of season 2, but new character to talk about in season 3. What are your thoughts on Temperance?
I don't love Temperance.
I agree.
I thought the whole like swapping the actor, and I was not convinced with Temperance 2.0. Like, I did not love her performance, and I just felt that she was a catch-all. Like, speaking of like evil woman, like villain, I felt like, what were her motivations? Did she care about her daughter? Did she not? Does she just want power? Like, I feel like she wasn't a very well-developed character, and they're kind of like, well, I guess we need a big bad for this season, so we'll have Temperance.
I feel like part of it was purposefully vague so that she could be that big bad, that they didn't want to give her all the motives. I thought, yeah, she just wants power. She wants to open this gateway and cause a tsunami and all that at the end. But also, I think it's weird that her spells and everything and curses and hexes come with a moth.
Yeah, I just felt like they kept it vague to keep their options open in the writing room and then didn't know where they wanted to go with it. So I don't know. She gave me big like Glory vibes from Buffy, but like Glory is like the epitome of camp and amazingness. And so when you have that to compare it to, you're like, Temperance kind of lukewarm.
And then Glory at least turned into a cute Ben, so I like
Exactly.
that. That's a really funny comparison that I would not have ever come up with, but yeah, love that. For me, to be a stereotype of myself, where I'm all about the character moments and the relationships, and I don't care about plot, Temperance didn't help that. Like, Temperance definitely, to me, continued the like, okay, this is just happening, and I don't really, I'm not, I'm following because I'm doing this podcast, but if I were just watching the show for fun, this is where I would go grab some chips. So But I do agree with you, Elena, that Temperance 1 was better than Temperance 2.
I do think that one thing that was interesting about Temperance was that she kind of was driving a wedge between Bess and the rest of the group, and Bess was trying to like kind of find herself and her witchy ways. But I find even that wasn't done very well. It was done just enough to like create tension and make me hate it. I was like, no, I want them to love each other again. But not enough to actually see Bess develop as a witch or a sorcerer or whatever. Yeah. So again, cool opportunities, maybe lacked execution.
Do you guys think we're done with Temperance, or do you think she might return?
God, I hope so.
To the first part.
I mean, am I allowed to make predictions for season 4?
That was my next question. Yeah, of course.
Okay, so will we end where like Ace can't be or Nancy can't be with Ace or whatever? Mm-hmm. And I think that will be the crux of season 4, especially since we know it's the final season now. So I think it will be interesting for the show, because as much as there have been love triangles and romantic relationships, it's never been the focus of the show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if my prediction is correct and we make Nancy Ace the big dilemma of season 4, how do you think that will affect the dynamics and the kind of plots that are possible?
I kind of feel like there's going to be like a division of people who side with Nancy and people who side with Ace. And I don't know. I feel like Bess might go onto Nancy's side, which I think would cause major problems.
Not the Platankers.
Well, so in my mind, Bess is going to find out about the curse and know that she can't tell Ace about it. Although the rules of the curse seem a little bit murky, so maybe Ace can know about it.
Yeah, can we revise the rules of the curse?
I think it's just if they ever are to act on their feelings, he will die.
I think that's the basis of it. Because I feel like Nancy was like, we can't be together. And he's like, why? She's like, I can't tell you. And you're like, okay, so they can be aware?
That wasn't stated. I took that as she's not going to tell him because it's a TV show and it'll make it more dramatic. But I feel like she could tell him.
Okay.
From what we were given, it seemed to me like they just can't be together or he'll die. Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure we were told that there should be a satisfying conclusion, right? Like they knew it was going to end.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they'll get together. But that would be really interesting if there is a split between the Drew crew and people siding.
I hate that though.
Yes, I know. They're so much better when they're together.
I do like when they're together, but I would rather the season be driven by these characters and these relationships. And then if there was more, instead of a big bad this season, if there was more of an episodic enemy or an episodic ghost problem, mm-hmm. that would be really exciting for me, because then we can just have the through line of the characters that we've grown with for three seasons. Because I don't need a new big bad in the last season. I don't need it. Like, I just kind of want to wrap up what we were doing, knowing that it is the end.
If I could be allowed another Buffy reference, it's kind of like kind of like season 6, where the big bad is depression and the patriarchy. But like it's really about, you know, Buffy dealing with like being forcefully brought back from the dead. Sorry, spoilers from Buffy, but I think it would be interesting, as you say, Ben, like if we have, you know, the monster of the week formula to keep it, but really it's about these teenagers becoming young adults and having to deal with these difficult things. And also, what does it mean they can't be together?
Right. That's very vague.
Because you're like, is this like a really conservative definition of like, they cannot consume the relationship, like some weird thing. Like, can't they not hang out together? What if they're like emotionally really close? Like, what if they co-parent a child?
Yeah. Or like have an asexual relationship where they're like cuddling on the couch, but not kissing or doing nothing else. Like, that's a great question.
Well, in the episode when she goes to talk to him, the barometer breaks when they're just like standing too close to each other, which was what happened in the alternate reality.
Right.
So I think that was a sign that they were getting too close.
Okay.
Okay. So they can't physically be in the same room having feelings.
That'd be, I hope the show keeps it consistent and really plays with it. Like, I'd love to see, like, can they like laugh over something silly that Beth says, or will that be too much of a bonding? Can they like have a lingering eye contact from across the room? Like, I'd love to see how they play with that.
Oh, and just seeing like Nancy's reaction, like if something like that mm-hmm. happens, and then like if Ace like stubs his toe, if she's like, oh my God, are you okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, showing too much concern. But like, yeah, where does it cross the line between, you know, being trauma bonded with your friends because of supernatural elements and like mm-hmm. romantic feelings? I don't know. Do you think that they'll make them date other people and go on awkward double dates?
I hope so now.
Yeah, definitely about that.
They'll be like, we'll test this. Like, can we break the curse by like double dating?
Sorry. I don't see Nancy having a love interest this coming season that is not Ace, but I would not be surprised if Ace had a very light one because Nancy's avoiding him.
Uh-huh. So now thinking about this, I would love an episode where everyone knows about the curse. They're trying to figure out how to break it. And if they can enter like alternate realities, I feel like Beth can figure out how to do this, and they can just play out different scenarios to know like how far they can go. And so it's like, oh, you know, Nancy and Ace go out to dinner just as friends and the chandelier falls on him and he dies, and then it just, you know, starts over again. And okay, let's try something else. Although that would be really traumatic to watch the person you love die over and over again.
Yeah. What I'm hearing you say is that we need a Nancy Doctor Who crossover.
Yeah, there you go.
And they need to go to like space and have different like realities everywhere. It's like Star Trek, Doctor Who. I see.
I love it.
Oh, that makes me think, does this curse only play out in Horseshoe Bay? Because that's like Temperance's jam. So what if they move?
Yeah, and they're all about the boundaries and like mm-hmm. the circles of power. So yeah, what if they like go to New York? Can they live there?
Yeah,
that would be cool.
And then she would have to decide between going to live with her love and the love of her town.
Oh, but also, didn't she want to go to Columbia? That would work out.
I feel like, yeah, that probably would. Yeah, but Columbia rejected her. So
yeah,
awkward.
Understandably, because she probably had terrible grades. Yeah,
probably.
And her big cover letter or whatever was probably like, I'm too busy for this.
Or they're like, this is a great fiction essay about these ghosts and stuff.
But can you fly an airplane? That's what we're really looking for.
Yeah, the extracurriculars probably didn't match. But yeah, that would be interesting if it would be like, or, you know, you can be with Ace, but you can't see any other person from the Drew crew. Like, you have to like live with him forever. And I don't know.
I could see that. The moving away storyline is now something that I'm going to be on the lookout for sure.
And it could be like a way to end the show, I guess, where they decide like, you know, we tried everything through it all. We still want to be together. So let's just leave. Yeah.
They'll figure it out in the last episode, I'm sure.
Okay. What do you guys think is up with the all the graves being open at the very end of the season 3?
Oh, I forgot about that, but now I have zombies in my mind, so.
Hey, zombies, ghosts, yeah, all of that leads really well into my Monster of the Week theory. We'll just do a different grave each episode. Yeah?
Do you think that we'll have a historical Horseshoe Bay episode where they all dress in costume and, like, we get to see the people from the grave, like, be alive?
Maybe.
Or, like, the zombies, like, restore Horseshoe Bay to like 1800s, and yeah, that would be fun.
It would not surprise me if Horseshoe Bay had like a reenactment day, like, because they have such weird holidays where everyone had to wear like bonnets and all that.
And it's the Northeast, which television tells me is obsessed with the Revolutionary War, so
yeah. Mm-hmm. I really need George in a bonnet now.
Oh my god.
Okay, how do you think it will play out between George and Nick, because that was fraught?
Ooh.
I think they'll end up together, but I don't really know what that's going to look like.
So I think I want them together, but I don't know if I want them together for the right reasons. Like, I want them together because they give each other stability, mm-hmm. but maybe not that they're good for each other.
Yeah, I don't see them in the long haul, like if they were a real couple. I mean, I think for TV reasons, like, yeah, we want them together, but
yeah,
I don't think, I think they were good for the time that they had together. I think at that moment in their lives, they were really good for each other, but maybe not as a decades long relationship.
If there were going to be more than four seasons, I could definitely see them not being endgame and getting new people and developing on their own separately, which I think would be good for both those characters. But since it is known to be the last season, I feel like they're going to end up together.
Do you think then they'll find pressure to give Bess? Like,
I was just about to ask that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Addie, Lisbeth, right?
Lisbeth will come back. Lisbeth. Addie.
Addie never felt really compelling.
And then Amaya, I think that's how.
Yeah.
I was reading her name, so I don't remember how it was pronounced, but
that's right.
I met her in the first season, and I loved her.
The one that the Marvins wanted her to get with? Yeah, that was thrown away, which was very strange.
I mean, I think it would be cool if they didn't. Like, they didn't force, like, something to happen. I mean, I would be happy if Bess, like, became Grand Witch Extraordinaire and, like, lived in a mansion with, like, animals that listened to her spells and, like, fetched her tea and stuff. I think that would be cool for her.
Now I want to spin off of just that.
But not on the CW. R.I.P. All right. Well, this was lovely. Any other thoughts or questions or concerns?
I'm excited to see what you'll do next, and obviously excited for the coverage of season four. And yeah, definitely call me up if you need to discuss the other Black Girl series.
It's already in our notes. We already were like, well, we've got to, because you're the reason we read the book. So absolutely.
I'm so glad I was able to set forth in motion this beautiful trajectory.
Truly the weirdest thing. Like, the most, like, what is that? Kismet? Is that what that's called? I don't know. Things happening for reasons I don't know.
Is that serendipity? I don't know.
I don't know. Sure.
I don't know. I took a huge risk because I was just like, I've been listening to this podcast, this Nancy Drew podcast, and I kind of just want to be friends with these people. So I'm going to ask them to read a book with me.
Well, you succeeded. And, we're so glad you did. So, well, Elena, thank you so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun, and I'm like really pumped for season four now.
Yeah, I am too.
I know, this was like really refreshing, and I was like, ooh, now I can't wait.
Well, go ahead and go check out Elena's pods. And do you want to plug your Instagram again real quick?
Sure. So at WOQM pod for the Women of Questionable Morals, at Bookshelf Remix for the book podcast, and at Philo CC pod for Philosophy Casting Call.
Sweet.
Ooh, that's a lot of social media to manage. Good for you. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, listeners, for sticking with us. Yeah. We cannot wait for season four. And we're hopefully going to have a few new fun episodes on the way before it happens.
I think our next thing is the season three superlatives, where we basically just talk about how much we love Agent Park. So, all right, Drew crew, till next time, keep on seeing everything.
Bye.
I Watch This As an Adult is a podcast where we reminisce about movies from our childhood, and we see if it still holds up, or we just say, I used to watch this crap. Check out the podcast to see what we say. Peace.